I'm Robert,
and this is The Outfall, where we share the backstories of our water and infrastructure world. Today's episode begins with a phone call.
I got a call from a landowner who had a pond. She said that it was really muddy, we'd been in a long drought, and we had just gotten the first bit of rain. So when she said her pond was discolored, it was brown, it was muddy. I said, it's likely just gonna be some mud. You know, let's give it a week, let's see if it settles out.
This is Tansy Belkin, who works for the Clemson Extension Service as a water resource agent. She helps educate the public on different aspects of water quality, from everything from stormwater in urban areas to pond calls. Well, Tansy followed up with this landowner the following week and found out the pond was still a muddy mystery.
I said, all right, this is worth me coming to take a look at. When I got there, I was wearing polarized sunglasses, and you get up to the pond, you're like, yeah, okay, it's brown, it's muddy. And then you take your glasses off and it changed color. It was a little bit more green, kind of brown, green, gold, depending on, you know, if you squinted your left or your right eye, it would change color. So we were looking at it, we were talking about it. It was a farm pond. Her dogs didn't have access to it. She didn't have horses anymore. There was really nothing big that jumped out to me of what could cause some of these problems. And it was, the color threw me off really bad. So we talked, we decided let's take a water sample, we'll send it in. I had just been at a training with Dr. Haynes talking about algae samples. It was perfect timing. I said, let's go send it in, let's see what happens. And the first sample that we sent in, got a glass mason jar, collected the water, and when we pulled up the sample, it was clear. It looked like you could almost drink it. There was a little bit of algae floating in it, a little bit of grass debris floating in it, but it was more or less crystal clear. And I said, well, you know, we're going to send it in. We're going to see, you know, our eyes don't always pick up on everything that's in the water. So we sent that in. And we also sent in a pond bottom sample at the same time. Figured, let's cross all our bases. So we sent it in mid-September. A couple weeks went by. We were starting. She was calling, finding out, have we heard anything? And we hadn't heard anything. So I said, let me come back out. Let me collect another sample. The first sample we sent off was in a glass jar. It might have got broken, anything like that. So I go and collect the second sample. Figured maybe it might have had some more time to settle out. It looked the exact same. Crystal clear, a little bit of green stuff floating in it, the scientific term. And so I get back to the office, I check my email, and right then the results had come in where the initial sampling kind of showed a whole lot of nothing. There was maybe some microcystins, there was a little bit here, a little bit there, but there was nothing of concern. So I sent it off to Dr. Haynes, and he knows more about his process than I do. I sat pretty and kind of waited and hung out and talked about it. We had sent it, I'd shown multiple people the sample before, some of our forestry agents, some of our other water agents. You know, every time I leave, I think most of the water agents, when we leave a site visit, we have that one coworker that we have to call and, you know, run everything through and, hey, this is what happened to me. Have you ever seen this before? And everybody that I showed was kind of surprised by it. So we thought maybe it could have been a golden algae. We thought maybe it could have been, what was the other one that we were worried about? Could have been diatoms. And we just really weren't sure because it wasn't green. It wasn't green. It wasn't brown. It was green brown, which I'm waiting for Crayola to come out with that color crayon, but they haven't yet.
So Tansy had a mystery on her hands, but help was coming. Tansy sent her samples to Dr. Haynes, along with the pictures of the pond.
My name is John Haynes, and I am a retired limnologist from Clemson University. I used to teach aquatic ecology and limnology, and now I guess they're hard up enough to want me to be the person who identifies algae for them at the plant problem clinic. So that's what I do now. It's kind of fun. This particular problem was a really nice one. It actually called from lots and lots of different aspects of my field and my experience. The jar came in and it was not broken. The water in it, when I saw the sample, I said, this is going to be a tough one because I don't see anything. There's nothing at the surface. There's very little on the bottom. And so I took a look at it, and sure enough, it was almost impossible to find anything. There were a couple of colonies of cyanobacteria, but nothing to speak of. And I said, well, this can't possibly be the problem that they're talking about with this pond. So I sent back a message to my supervisor. I asked, get me a photograph of the pond. I want to see the problem. Well, Tansy apparently sent the photographs back, and I got them. I took one look at those photographs, and I said, this is not the sample that I received first. That kind of color, that intensity of turbidity could not have come from this water. There has to be something else there. And all of a sudden, I realized this, I had a really strong suspicion that one, the sample had been taken late in the day, and two, the time of year was typical for a particular type of organism to bloom. And putting those two things together, along with the physics of water movement, hydrodynamics, I realized I think this may be the problem. So I suggested that she take the sample as early as possible in the morning, if possible, before sunrise. There are two reasons for that. One, if it was the candidate algae that I thought it might be, they have the ability to exhibit a phototactic response. That is to say, they avoid intense light. So if it was that particular species, it would basically swim to a greater depth as the sun's intensity increased during the day. The other reason was if it had merely been something that settled out during the stratified period during the middle of the day, she would miss it if she took a shallow water sample. But in the morning, after back radiation off the surface of the lake and perhaps some wind or something like that, and evaporation, of course, the cooling at the surface overnight would set up a density instability that would cause convective mixing in that surface of the lake and bringing these particles back up to the surface. The early morning was the best chance of getting a fair sample of what was causing this problem. So that was the first part of it. And the second part was, if it was a living organism that was doing this, and especially if it was the candidate that I was suspicious of, we needed to make sure that we concentrate this stuff. And the only way I could see, especially if it was something that could swim, only thing I could see would be to hit it with a preservative of some kind that would basically fix all the cells, that is to say, kill the cells, thus allowing them to settle out. And so the most common one that you probably, you may or may not have heard of, is an iodine-based algal preservative. So Tansy did everything exactly right. I got the plastic bottle with the concentrated sample, and it only took me 5 minutes of preparation and examining it under the microscope. It was obvious. It was an immediate realization that my suspicion had been correct, that the candidate organism was, in fact, the culprit in this particular problem. It had nothing to do with diatoms or golden algae, although those do cause problems. So the candidate organism, it turns out, is a type of organism called a dinoflagellate. The last part of that name should clue you into the fact that they have a flagella, and even though it's a single cell, this particular organism can swim quite well through fairly substantial depths in a pond. If there's any kind of turbulence or mixing process going on in the pond, they cannot swim strongly enough to overcome that mixing. that makes them plankton. But in the afternoon, on a pond like this, that kind of mixing is suppressed because of the intense sunlight and the warming at the surface sets up a temporary thermocline, a density gradient. And these things can avoid the intense light by swimming deeper and deeper into the pond until the light intensity is low enough that they no longer decide to swim away. They actually don't make these decisions. They just do it automatically. They don't have brains, obviously. So she took the sample at the right time, preserved it exactly the way it should be, concentrated the sample. I got it, looked at it, and there it was. It was loaded with this particular dinoflagellate. The genus is Perinanium, and it's well known for these kinds of migratory behaviors on a diurnal basis, coming up near the surface in the middle of the night and then diving deeper and deeper during the daytime on a diurnal or 24-hour basis. And at that point, I was excited. Two reasons. First of all, we solved the problem and the mystery. And second of all, it was a great story. Very next thing I thought of, this is a story that other extension agents or anybody else working with ponds like this should hear, because what it does is it connects what we do in the field to the biological activity of a particular type of organism and to the physics of water movement and on a diurnal basis in a particular time of year. So we have the periodicity of how these things grow. They usually are late summer, early fall organisms when they bloom. They like warmer temperatures, apparently. And so there's that part of it. They're capable of this migratory behavior. There's that part of it. And then there's the water itself, the physics and the hydrodynamics of the water. It all came together perfectly in a great story that solved the mystery. And there it was, mystery solved.
Now that they had the results, Tansy had to go talk to the landowner.
I ended up telling her, I said, you know, the good news is that we know what's causing it. The better news is that you're not going to have to worry about having a toxicity issue as the weather changes or as any of the dinoflagellates die. If anything dies in the pond, you're not going to have to worry about the toxicity. On the flip side, that means that there's really nothing that needs to be done right now. As the days get shorter, as the weather cools down, you're going to see your pond return back to normal, hopefully for a little while. Unfortunately, that does mean that if you don't solve the nutrient issues that you have in the pond, anytime we see these color changes, it's because there's excess nutrients. There's, as I said, she was feeding her fish. So there's extra food in the water for some of these organisms. So unless you solve that issue, you could see algal blooms in the future. You could see this happen with a harmful algae bloom maybe next summer. And so it's kind of been a blessing because it's kept anything harmful from taking over in your pond, but it is a little bit unsightly. So really my biggest recommendation to her was to reduce the amount that she's feeding her fish.
Thank you to Tansy and Dr. John Haynes for sharing this fascinating story with us. Unraveling the mystery of this discolored pond highlights the intricate interplay between these nutrient levels, water physics, and biology. It was a good reminder for me that comprehending our natural world is always an ever-evolving process. We've got an exciting lineup of stories in production right now. We can't wait to bring them to you. Until then, stay curious.